Again, welcome. So this is again module 4, presenting the path, and this is our fourth class, right? So good. So let's do a calm abiding meditation. All right. Just a reminder, if you have a cell phone, if you want to turn off, that'd be great. So you want to keep your back straight. If you are sitting on the chair, you want to keep your feet flat. If you are sitting on a cushion, you want to have a vajra position or full lotus or half vajra. Your arms are relaxed on the lap and your right hand is over the left hand and your thumbs are touching each other like a teardrop. Your head is slightly tilted forward with the gaze on the floor or in front of you. And your jaw and your mouth are relaxed, teeth slightly apart. Your tongue, the tip touches the back of your teeth on the upper palate. And your eyes are either closed or slightly open. So relax and scan the body. Release any tension that you may have. And then bring your attention to your breath. Either feel the cool tingling on your nostrils or just focus on your abdomen going in and out. And continue to keep your mind on the breath. If your mind starts to wander, just gently bring it back to your breath. Okay, now with a little calmer state of mind, let's set our intention or motivation, a short one but a strong one. Okay. We want to do this action of listening to the teachings about karma, to do a meditation on purification. Let's set the intention, strong one, to develop positive qualities so that we can be benefit to others, no matter how long it takes. Thank you. All right. I think we've covered enough of the class one several times, so I'm going to jump to class two. But first class, we went through biographies and who was Lama Tisha and Lama Tsongkhapa and so forth, and about who Buddha was and how he did the three teachings, the three turnings, what's called, right? And we went through that very quickly. But let's just focus a little bit on these definitions that we went in class two, actually. And I'm doing this because it kind of gives you the bridge. Remember in the first class I mentioned that in every class, we'll make these connections, right? So you want to make sure that when you think about this LAMRIM, right, junior school, high school, graduate school, or scope one, middle scope, or higher scope, or greater scope, however you want to divide this, the three scopes. And of course, you have to know the first one so you can advance the second one. So you know the second one and the first one, and so then you get the third scope, right? That's the way it progresses. It's made very easy for us. It's made very simple for us. You can just imagine when Lama Atisha went to Tibet, Buddhism was flourishing. There were a lot of lamas and teachers there, but they lost the plot, remember? Because why? Really not organized, 84,000 teachings. And that's what happens to a lot of students here too, right? When we come to this class and you come one day, you decide, hey, there's a Kadampa Center, let me just see what they're doing, right? And some class is going on and all of us are like, what are they talking about, right? Or there's a puja going on and you come at 2 o'clock and now you're really lost, right? And the idea of this class, presenting the path, is to simplify some of those things, to get you organized in your mind as to how things are actually laid out for us. And then it's up to you to develop your practice. And not only that, do a little more reading. So you'll find questions like, I still don't get this, you know. Like, I get the main thing, but I still like need to know more than this. Some people have technical mind, and some people have, they just want to know simple things, right? Either way, you have a lot of resources available. And we mentioned a couple of those already for LAMRIM, right? From Lama Tsongkhapa, you have 3 volumes. And then we also have from Pabongka Rinpoche, The Liberation in Palm of Your Hand. Those are 2 books that I really go to. And it's really, really very helpful. Whenever you have a subject and you're really not sure, a lot of times you'll find a book or you go and Google yourself and you start to research and you find BuddhaNet and somebody else saying this and somebody else saying, but I prefer to go through the lineage teaching to get your mind pretty organized in the correct fashion, because it comes from Buddha through our lineage teachers. And then you can go to commentaries just to get your mind wrapped around it a little bit. So perfectly fine, right? So having said that, I think it's important to go through the definitions. We covered nirvana. We covered enlightenment, samsara, ignorance, the root of samsara, the 3 poisons. And the 3 poisons are the ignorance, attachment, and aversion. So I know we had one break in between, so some of it is a little foggy, right? So we'll quickly go through it. I won't spend a lot of time on repeating everything, but for those that didn't come or for those that have forgotten, it's good repetition. Okay, and then we talked about the qualities of Buddha. And the reason we talked about that is, that's another big question, right? A lot of times we talk about suffering a lot, but we don't talk about why are we talking about it. We really don't discuss the reason behind it. The goal is, remember, to become enlightened. That's to become happy. So you should really focus on that, how to become happy. And that is to become enlightened, right? And so it's important, and you want to know what that means. Where is Buddha and what does he do and what are these qualities we talk about and what's that state of mind? Because if your goal is to become a Buddha, you better know what that state of mind is, because that's what you want to yearn for. That's what you're looking for. And you really have to think about that. When we talk about, oh, you want this happiness. Well, everybody wants happiness. But what is that happiness? And what is the samsaric happiness? You need to make the differences. So we talked about the qualities of Buddha, the omniscient, the omnipotent, all-knowing, all-compassionate, all-wise, all-pervading. And then we talked about the 3 scopes, right? So let's be kind and take a look at nirvana. So remember, we talked about 2 attitudes, right? Hinayana attitude, Mahayana attitude. This is not about a lower vehicle and a higher vehicle. It translates that way. However, you need both. If you don't go through your first 6 grades, you can't put yourself in university either. Okay? But it's not a lower and higher. It's a fundamental need. First, you must liberate yourself from this monkey chatter that we carry all the time. Take all these obscurations out. That itself is a tremendous place to be. When you can liberate yourself, that's liberation. Liberation from what's happening in this beautiful mind of ours, right? So nirvana is a state of complete freedom from samsara. So all the obscurations are gone. A goal of practitioner. Now remember, this is a practitioner, self, you as an individual, seeking his or her own escape. That's what we are doing also. Now take it a little further. You want to become Buddha. So this is now not individual. It is universal. Buddha, really remember, it is omniscient and omnipotent, which we'll define in a minute. It's a fully awakened Buddhahood, being omniscient, the ultimate goal of a Mahayana Buddhist. Attained when all obscurations have been removed and all of the qualities of mind have fully actualized. A state characterized by perfect compassion, wisdom, and power. So now we add in the compassion part of it, universal. Right? Okay? Then we use this word all the time, the cyclic existence or samsara. So what is samsara? So we defined it. It's a beginningless reoccurring cycle of death and rebirth under the control of delusion and karma fraught with suffering. And then we talked about the root of samsara. Why is it there? What's the root of it? And so its definition is very simple. The very source of all troubles is a wrong perception or the wrong ideation. We are always holding some sort of an I. And we'll talk about that a little bit. This I, we all have that. It's one thing to talk conventionally, I am speaking, I would like a glass of water. Nothing wrong with that. But it is, when something favorable comes towards you or some danger comes to you, something happens here, right? That I is not to be found. It's what they're saying. It's a wrong fabrication and we latch onto that. And so what happens from that I, everything becomes me, mine. So now the attachment. So my place, my shirt, my style, right? All these things begin. And then all of a sudden, we put more and more layers of that on it. And if anybody wants to take that away or comes in its way, what happens? We grab at it. We grasp at it. We crave at it. And this is telling you that, remember, in the way the nature exists, the way the phenomena exist, things are interdependent. We'll talk about that a little bit. And we exist conventionally, but not the way we think. The fabricated way. So we'll talk about that a little bit. So that's talking about root of samsara, ignorance, the wrong ideation. And of course, ignorance is defined here too. Not seeing what is truly there. This is not talking about conventional. This is ignorance. If I tell you this is not a book, this is a book. That's ignorance too. But they're talking about the way things exist. And we'll cover that in a moment today. Okay? It's good to know these fundamental definitions. And have it in your head. So when you're reading it, you're not thinking about what they're talking about. You know this stuff. Okay, then we talked about qualities of Buddha. This is our goal. Right? This is what we want to become. This is why we are here. Or at least we are thinking. We think that's why we are here. So omniscience. Wisdom that knows exactly what and how. Where and what and who. So if your mind, if you remember from classes before, it's all-knowing. Clear, all-knowing, and it's beginningless. We'll cover that in a minute again as a refresher. And then omnipotent. Capacity to do what needs to be done in a perfectly to benefit others, to benefit sentient beings. So now put that combination together. Knows the wisdom that knows what, how, where and what, and who. And then has the capacity to do and go help the sentient beings. So you can very easily see all knowing, all compassionate, all wise, all pervading. For depending on the faith you are, that sounds almost God-like. Buddha is saying, it's nobody making that decision. You are able to do that. That's your potential. So you can become a Buddha. That's the fundamental thing about this particular path. So got to think about that. If you really think about how mind works, how Buddhahood is, and that you have the capacity to go there, and all you have to do is take this filter and take a lot of these layers and layers and layers that we've been collecting one at a time out or work on it, and you will eventually reach that point. At least you will liberate yourself from the chatter that you have. That's the first step. right? So that's why we defined it. Good so far? Okay. Then we talked about the three primers or the three contemplation. Again, what does the contemplation mean? You ponder, you think about these things. So when you start getting into the path seriously, you got to really have a fundamental understanding of what is mind. Okay? You need to understand the need for a spiritual teacher, and we'll cover that in a second. And the third, the precious human rebirth. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about mind. We already said it is non-physical. It is formless. It does not have a beginning. Everything is a mental moment. It is continuous. Right? Amazing part is you can mold it. That's the best part of it. You can really make your mind change. Right? Because we are so habituated, and this whole practice, this whole path that we are talking about is experiential. It's one thing to see this, read this, and say, yeah, it makes sense. Another thing to take one thing at a time and say, what's going on in there? And it will fight you. Imagine Buddha sitting under that tree and they talk about the war with Mara. Just think what kind of mind, what happens, because you've been doing this for so many lifetimes. And all of a sudden, you just can't walk out and say, oh, I'm not going to be angry anymore. That just doesn't happen like that. But you got to make an effort to say, I'll control it for a while. That's the start. But you're cognizant of it here. All right? So let's talk about mind again. Let's repeat. It's beginningless. So synonym is a synonymous with consciousness. So when you see, when we talk about mind in Tibetan, a lot of times they'll go right here, consciousness. Okay, it's defined, which is clear and knowing, a formless entity that has ability to perceive objects. Mind is divided into six principal consciousness, and there are 51 mental factors. Let's not worry about those. That was in mind and its potential. All this, once you have something, there are other factors that work with it. As soon as you see that pillow, your mind already goes to, well, it's a burgundy, it's a big, it's round, it's nice, it's soft, it's dirty, it's clean. Boom, 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 boom. Your mind is already making decisions, right? So that's what mind's job is, to know and perceive object. It's your own. Very key point here. Your mind is your own. And it's not physical, and it's not this body, it's not a soul, and it's not your brain. Okay? And it has this marvelous potential. So, you can surmise that the entire spectrum of your inner and outer experiences, those mental moments, is your mind. And the potential is enlightenment. That's the ultimate goal. Make sense? Okay, talking about a teacher, this is probably one of the most difficult one for a lot of people, especially in the West, because we watch TV, and I've talked about that before. But you got to understand that according to Lamrim, this is an essential part. And what they're saying is, you don't have to jump in blindly into looking for a teacher and saying, oh, first one that comes is my teacher. No, nothing like that. They're saying it really work this in your mind. Once you establish that, so we have some points here, right? How to find one. You check the teacher's quality. You come here so often, you interact with them, and you start to see that the person is really what he's preaching and talking about. Really is a wonderful human being that can help me, right? Then we have check the students. It's another way to check it. If their students are doing well and are successful, right? We do that with other things. You know, you buy a house or a car or something like that. You see, oh, he's driving well and he likes it. Let me ask him, how do you like it? We do that. But for spiritual, for some reason, it becomes esoteric, very mystical, something separate. It's nothing different. Same. Right? Then you check their peers. Like I was giving you an example of the two classes back. When you see Venerable Rabina come here, or Venerable Amy come here, or Venerable Chernoff come here, and you walk away thinking, wow, that was fantastic. Well, if they learned from Lama Zopa Rinpoche, then you know he's a valid teacher, and these are valid students. So it's simple as that, right? But once you develop this confidence, then you develop faith. And once you have that, then you can really make this an essential part of your practice. Okay? So that's the whole point they're saying. And then you can learn about how to devote one's mind to a teacher. This is not something you go and saying, okay, this is my teacher. No, nothing like that. Check it out. The teacher has to check you out and you have to check the teacher out. Enough about that. In the last one we talked about, these are three fundamentals, guys. You need to constantly be aware of it and think about these things. And the third thing is the precious human rebirth. We keep on talking about this in so many ways. But here's your opportunity. This is what I look at it. So window of opportunity, right? You have taken this birth. You have a mind, and the mind can think. And we already know and we've defined the mind. This is your opportunity to wake up and saying, all these habits and tendencies I have, this is my opportunity to do something about it. Okay? This is not a flip a switch and everything gets changed. But you have an opportunity to work at it. Even if you do little, it's much better than people absolutely not aware of it. How lucky you are to be here. Okay? And look at that. We have opportunity to practice. We are born in a country that is very well thought of and has so many things to offer to you. Okay? You have a sane mind, hopefully. You have shelter and food. And then you're not completely overwhelmed with delusions. We have delusions all the time, but not so overwhelmed that you can't even think straight. Okay? And in the end, we closed with this slide and just kind of summarizes the three contemplations. Nature of our mind, necessity for a teacher, and precious human rebirth. And so the key point is, do not waste it. Right? That's the point. Once you like it, once you understand it, once you've checked it out, like you check a gold or a diamond out, once you know that this is really telling you the way it is, and once you have that conviction, then you want to start to practice. Right? Then we talked about death and impermanence. Obviously, they want to talk about that because it is part of our life. It is part of the process. And what we do is we deny. We live in this denial that it's not going to happen today. It's not going to happen tomorrow. But we all know it can happen any time. And the three major things you need to contemplate on is that it is definite. It's coming, like it or not. Right? The time of it is uncertain. It can happen any time. You see healthy people go. You see old people go. Sickness comes. Anytime you can go. And the point number three is to prepare. That's the key point. Right? So you got to really think about that and not be afraid of it. It's a simple, if your mind is continuous, if there's a continuity of the mind, and you can see that logically, right? This thought came from a previous thought. That thought must have come from its previous thought. It goes on and on and on. That will go this way too. So whatever you do now, or you can think, or action-wise, body, speech, and mind, then it has its effect. Then that will have its effect. So what you're really doing is you're slowly changing your mind, and you're preparing. So when you go, your last thoughts are not fear or craving or grasping, and we'll cover that in a moment. And then what they call throwing karma. So all this karma has been accumulated, a subtle consciousness of mere mind is now going to catch on to what your main essence is, and is going to go and project outside. It's going to go and take another rebirth, go to intermediate state and another birth. And so what's important to know is, what have you cultivated till this point? Think about it. Where will your mind go? It will go to where it's comfortable. So generally speaking, if you're a positive, you have a positive state of mind, then you will have a positive result. You go with a negative state of mind, guess what happens? That's the baggage you carry. So what we are saying is precious human rebirth is when you read these things, think about it and think about the habits and tendencies we have, right? And then think about what is it that you want to work on. And this class is about presenting the path of all these different tools, but I'm just highlighting a few things that you need to contemplate or go deeper into to get a little more understanding of it. Okay? Then we talked about the death process. I think it's important to know. You know, for a person that works out, it's important to know what the size of the dumbbells are or whatever the weight is and where is it going to be and how much can I bend? Do I need a belt? You prepare for it so you don't get hurt. Same way, it's important to know the death process. It's a very logical, natural process. Nothing to be scared about. Right? It's not like, hey, one life lived, over. That's that ego grasping. Because you want this very package to continue. Right? But you don't know. It's all based on your karma and imprint. Right? So you need to prepare for it. And we talked about there are four stages of gross dissolutions because they are all made up of water, earth, fire, right? Basic elements. And they dissolve and different parts of your body start to go. And then people think you are flatlined because you're no longer moving and the machine has a flat line. People cover you up and you finish. So Buddhism is saying you're not completely gone yet. The consciousness, the subtle consciousness is still dissolving. And it's a great time to have a nice environment for that person. You can do the prayers. Any imprint you can put on it, at least the imprint, if the person is able to get it, great. That's also good for you. But you're not creating an atmosphere where the consciousness is may want to latch onto something. So it's a great. This includes your pets. Remember, we somehow think human being, pets. But there's some chance. Remember, mind possessors. Maybe less evolved, in a different state of evolution, but they're still mind possessors. They can have imprints. They have fear. They know comfort. Right? So think about it. So for all of these things, any animal, any sentient being, a mind possessor. That's the way you want to think about. Okay? But at least for human being, just know that it takes, that's why in Tibetan culture and many Asian cultures, the body is kept for a while. They're not so worried about how the body will look. And, you know, they embalm him and they make him pretty and all that. They're not so concerned about that. They're more concerned about what is happening with their consciousness and how it needs to go. Okay? It's a great place. Okay, so then it's important to also talk about, it's good, these are all good subjects that are sometimes seem like, wow, why are we talking about this? It's good to face them. And remember, the state of mind can be really bad or very good. And depending on your mind, you can go into different dimensions or what they call realms. Okay, there are six realms. Okay, three upper realms, three lower realms. And if you dig deep into it, and get technical, there are many adjacent other characters, hundreds of them. Not part of a purview of this class, but just know that this is not where you, like I said, you buy a ticket and fly to. It's, your mind goes to that dimension based on what you carry with you. So you want to be at least, a good thing to be in a human realm in some, there's a beautiful upper realms also, the desire realms also. But remember, they live long. They have lots of things and lots of happiness, but that karma runs out and they gotta go right back into the cycle. But at least in the human realm, you have ups and downs, but you can practice. So it's not a bad place to be. That's why it's precious human life. Okay. So then what happens? So now you understand the basic how mind works, the precious human rebirth, the death, the impermanence of things. Nothing lasts forever, nothing. You look at this ground, this carpet, yourself, anything, it changes. Nothing is permanent, right? So we talked about that. So it's just like this body is impermanent, it will go on. Mind continues and keeps changing also. So then we talked about, once you understand this, you want to take guidance or you want to say, please, yes, this is my path, I really want to understand it. So you take refuge. All you're doing is committing to yourself. It is a self-commitment, right? It's like saying, yeah, I gotta do this. And so you take refuge in the Buddha, you take refuge in the Dharma, and you take refuge in Sangha. Okay? And so what is, of course we know Buddha, and Dharma are the teachings, and Sangha is the ordained and enlarged community. Okay? And this becomes your refuge. It's like a child going to a mother. This is when you need help for your mind, you want to go to Buddha's teachings. You want to go to these classes. You want to listen to Geshe-la. Right? And then the Sangha to help you. So that's what you're basically committing to. And a commitment is what? All these things, don't look at it over there. That's a commitment, that's a refuge, that's somebody's karma. It's your mind. What are you committing to? Not to somebody else. You're committing in your mind that this is good for me. I really want to learn this. I really want to practice this. I really want to change my mind. Then you're taking a refuge. There are 5 vows. You can take all of them or you can take partial. So, you know, you cannot kill, don't lie, don't steal, no sexual misconduct, no intoxicants, right? Some people take all 5, some take few. And some people repeat the refuge sometimes. Okay, then we talked about absolute Dharma and absolute Sangha and absolute Dharma, right? So what is this words? You hear these words, absolute and relative, when you're reading something. Whenever you talk about relative, you're talking about conventional, the way we see each other. So when I talk about Buddha, relative Buddha, I'm talking about Shakyamuni Buddha, historical Buddha. Okay? He was born, he was a prince, Siddhartha and all that, that's the relative Buddha. When we talk about absolute Buddha, we're talking about that omniscient mind, that omnipotent mind, completely clear and all-knowing, that nature of Buddha, pure, that's the absolute Buddha. Okay? Same thing goes with Dharma. Okay? Your regular teaching becomes relative. You open a book, you read, you memorize, you try to understand relative, everyday thing. Absolute realizations. When you start on a path to become a bodhisattva or a, you know, or Arya being, you have realizations and you can stay in there. That's absolute nature of teaching. First, you know, everything, right? When you take a language or something, first you open the book and say, oh my goodness, I don't know if I can learn this. Then you start with 1, 2, 3, A, B, C, D. Then you memorize it. Then you put some words together. So that's what we do relatively. This is what we're doing now. And then when you're practicing, some of these things will start to make this, aha, that's what they're talking about. Oh my goodness, I can sense that. When you start to feel these things, then you know you're getting some realizations. And it becomes really part of you now. It is no longer an effort. And all of these things, at least from my side, I'm saying, don't make it a compressed way of doing things. Like, I gotta do this and I gotta learn that and I gotta, don't do that to yourself. Do it in a normal sense. With enjoyment, with joyful effort, that if you can make a slight change and you can hang on to that for even a couple of hours, be happy about it. Normally you would have lost your temper for this. This time you were able to manage it. Be happy about that. But it kind of superimposes on each other and you start to see that you can do it more and more and more. And that's how you start to change some of your mind. Right? So, again, the goal is enlightenment. And remember, samsara is suffering, the cycle of birth and death. You take the refuge in the 3 jewels, the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. Those are the 3 jewels. And then we have the graduated lambrim that shows us the path. What to do, how to think, and what is the next step, and what you should be studying, and what should you be practicing. That's your lambrim. Right? Okay? Then karma. So let me go to my notes. I forgot where I was. Okay, karma. So what is karma? We talked about karma. Karma in Sanskrit means action. Karma, action. Okay, a dynamic implication of reaction, action, and reaction. It's like the seeds you sow. When you sow the seed, given the right conditions, a fruit comes out. Or, if you look at the fruit, you can imagine what the seed was, right? So you can understand the impact of something, okay? So positive karma creates positive outcomes, happiness. And negative karma creates negative. And it's all moment to moment. And it's all what you think. It's all about your body, mind, and speech. It's not only actions outside here, also what's going on in here. Okay? It's a natural law. Right? So positive, we talked about that. And yes, I wanted to mention this. We can see karma in a small scale, but remember, in instant or days or years, Buddhism sees them as occurring over lifetimes. The way you behave now, the habits you have now, some may have been generated during this lifetime, but there could be some root ones that have come many, many lifetimes with you. You keep on liking it, that's how you take birth. You keep on doing the same thing, you make it even more, then you take the same birth. That's the tendencies and habits. Okay? And then the abiding, and we use the word abiding in the law of karma. So where's the law part? This is not a government law. This is, Buddha says, believe it, don't believe it. Buddhist, non-Buddhist, it is there. Just like gravity is there. So we give a lot of credit to Sir Isaac Newton for gravity, right? Why? It's not that he created gravity. Gravity existed. But he contemplated on it, and something fell on his head. I say, ah, I gotta learn this. Why did it fall on my head? And then he experimented with it, and after a long time, he came with a scientific fact that yes, in fact, that's gravity that pulls things down to the earth. Same way, law of karma, like it or not, Buddha says, that's what it is. Karma. Cause and effect. Okay? Then, we talked about the ten non-virtuous actions, and let's go through that. Important to know what Master Nagarjuna has stated here. All the actions of body, speech, and mind created with an attitude of greed, hatred, and ignorance leads to suffering. From all actions created with the opposite attitudes of love, compassion, and wisdom, only happiness comes. And remember, we talked about it, wisdom wing and a compassion wing. We are going to wisdom wing right now. All these things. Compassion is the great scope, the third scope. So again, for people that missed the class, the 10 non-virtuous actions of body, speech, and mind, very fundamental stuff. Okay, killing, stealing, sexual misconduct, lying, speaking harshly, divisive speech, gossip, and of mind, covetousness, wanting other people's stuff, ill will, and wrong views. Each of this has readings you can do, just to understand what they're talking about. Okay? And Buddha is saying, if you can just manage these, you will be extremely relaxed and blissful. So then, we also covered the karma ripens in four ways. So ripens means you have these seeds in you, how they ripen. It ripens in four ways. So the fully ripened result, please make sure, yeah. So it talks about if you sow the seed, you'll get the fruit. Simple as that, very linear, right? It's a type of rebirth your consciousness will take when it leaves the body at the time of death. Past virtuous life, human rebirth, that kind of thing. Then we have the action similar to the cause. It's another way. These are tendencies and habits due to having them done before. Okay? If you've been lying and lying and lying and lying and stealing and finding happiness in that, then the tendency at some point will be to steal again or to lie again. It's just a tendency and a habit that we've created. Okay? So if you have a tendency of past anger, the tendency will be to be angry quickly. It's not a magic thing. It's exactly how the law works. Then the third one is the experience similar to the cause. Okay? So if you like a certain thing, if you've been lying a lot, for example, let me just hang on to that one. If you're lying a lot, maybe you're born in an environment where you can lie because you like it, and then you're surrounded by people that lie to you because that's that environment. So then you wonder why people get mad at you or they don't trust you or why somebody stole from me. You think about some things we may have done. But all in this is a good news. You can change that. This is just giving you an overview. Okay? And then the last one is the environmental karma, or also known as collective karma. Think of taking a birth in a place where there's earthquakes all the time or tsunamis all the time, or there's planes flying over your head throwing bombs at you every 10 hours or 3 hours. Or be in some part of African Sahara Desert where there is no water. So think about those things too. That's called collective karma. Okay? So Buddha says negative actions ripen as suffering and a positive actions ripen as happiness. It's a law. It's not a punishment. It's not a reward system. Nobody is judging you. You manage that. You can change it. So it's not somebody sitting over there saying, ah, you did 1, 2, 3 things wrong. This is your bus. It's not like that. You go and get onto the bus that you want to go into. So you have the opportunity to make those changes. And please, again, we'll talk about this in shortly, but I also want you to, while this subject is here, this is not about a guilt trip. This is more about, and we'll talk about the four ways opponent power shortly. Don't beat yourself down. Oh, I'm a bad person. That's not going to help you. Do something about it. That's the way to be. That's a wonderful thing about this path. You know, you can sit in a corner and just get totally like, oh my gosh, what a horrible person. It's not about that. You recognize it, you face it, and you do something about it. And you are here learning. You're in discovering Buddhism. You come to Sunday classes, whatever. Come to meditation with Michael and Gary and those. And develop your mind so you can change some of those things. Right? So that's the good part about this. Okay. Then we talked about how a fully ripened, four conditions for it to bring a fully ripened result. All right? Remember, we gave an example of a person called Paula killing an ant. Okay? He's cleaning the dishes, nice white marble sink area, sees an ant going, and goes and says, ah, and kills an ant. Okay? So, there was a intention of killing. There was an object, the ant. There was an action of killing, and there was a result, the ant died. That's a full cycle of karmic. That's how karma is considered, a full karma. Okay, you have to have an intention, you have to have an object, action, and then the result. Now think about another young lady who's just doing dishes, tries to move things, sun comes in, and there's an ant walking, didn't even see it, and her hand slides over it. And the ant dies. Two different karmas. Ant died. But there was no motivation to kill the ant. There was no intention. All I'm trying to say is, don't take it very linear. This for that, this for that. There are many ways karma works, right? So just know, the key thing is your intention, your motivation to harm. And where does that come from? You need to think about those things. Where did that come from? So remember how many times we've talked about this, the three poisons. Attachment, ignorance, attachment, and aversion. Okay, attached to my place, then you have a little not really understanding how things exist, that ant has a mind. Third piece is aversion, and a little exaggerated view of aversion is anger. All stems from not knowing, ignorance. And without even knowing, without even thinking, right? We do that all the time. Mosquitoes. But this, we want you to think, before you do it, maybe do that. It's just something to think about. It takes a while. Even a lot of people do fishing and all that, and this is not pointing finger, I'm just giving an example. Okay? It's fun. It's turned into like a magnet. It's enjoyment. We don't think. That's a mind. Some people will put it down. Some people will kill it. Some people do it and release it. Whatever the case is. But you see how our society has made some of these things as a nothing to it. And all I'm telling you is, before you harm something or before you kill something, just think, what's your intention? That's the main thing. I'm not here to go into a lot of details of what about this and what about that. That's not the point. Just think about your intention and motivation. Okay? Okay, we talked about habit. Very powerful. It's very spontaneous. It is our second nature. They can blind us. We just talked about it. And we may not even see the harm that we are bringing to others. That includes our speech. We may say certain things and not even realize how we are, what we sound to others or what we are saying sometimes. And again, a couple of things always keep in mind. You know, we want to go straight to the bottom line saying, oh, you're not being a doormat at any point in time. You manage your mind. You can go away from it. You can choose not to get engaged in it. Don't get into the whirlpool of argument. You can manage your mind. You let what needs to go in and you avoid what needs to be avoided. Now that you have a path and you understand what is it that you're protecting, think about it. And if something is leading you towards that negative state of mind, you can choose what you need to do. That's all. This is, so it goes sometimes anti-habit of what naturally happens for us, but we gotta think about it. Right? That's practice. Because it's not easy. You have to, if you eat candy every day and some mom says no more candy, you may throw a tantrum. Because it's a habit. I got it every single day. What's wrong with you now? But mom is thinking that's not good for you. So once you know it's not good for you, you can say, oh, that's why mom took it away. That's all. It's simple as that. Very logical, very organic, right? This is not somebody creating, making things up. You manage it. Okay, not going to get into this. Fishermen, we talked about it. It's the same story. So let's talk about this now. Now we get into a little more stuff. Four opponent powers. Okay. Good. So, need to understand that karma runs out. A good analogy is like a fuel tank. You know, the amount of fuel you put in, it runs out, the type of mileage you get. So what you put in has a certain cycle to it. Right? Next rebirth, if you cleanse it out, that is gone. It's out of your system, unless you create more and more and more and more on top of it. So the idea is to start doing practice, to start to think about before you say, do, kind of slow down is what they're saying, right? When I read some of this, Venerable Rabina very nicely says, slow down. Your mind is at high speed, immediately making stories up and making connections, he, she, it, all the time. Just loosen it up a little bit. Think about it and do it. And I'll tell you my personal story. You know, you work in a corporate environment and you get emails all the time, sometimes in bold letters. Where is it? Why didn't you get this done? Like you get all these emails. The immediate reaction is to say, hey, who you think you are? So I'm going to say, well, you didn't see my email, right? This comes up. This little eye pop starts to pop up. I walk away and make a little sound, come away. And say, well, thank you for reminding me. I thought we met on this yesterday, didn't we? Oh, yeah, thank you for that. Change the story. And it didn't matter. If you didn't do it, you didn't do it. Accept it and say, yep, thank you for reminding me. Here it is. Whatever the case, you can change that. Slow things, small things like that. Right? Then, as you already know, there are causes for everything. That's karma. Everything has a cause. And then we think, why does good things happen to bad people and bad things happen to good people? That's another thought that comes when you're thinking about karma. Remember, karma doesn't work all linear. So while dying, you could have a very positive thought in a good state of mind. You can take a birth as a human being. But you may have many other seeds of things you've been doing that also go with you. And therefore, you can be a millionaire and like that Enron guy or the Tyco guy. They were multimillionaires having everything in their life. Guess where they are? In jail. Another 20 to 25 years. Karma ran out. Or you could be in a poor state of mind and get a lot of respect, a lot of love, a lot of gifts. So it all depends. It's not just A to B is a line. There's a mixture of things. And that's why it's important to work with your body, speech, and mind. Three things, right? Simple as that. So, the first one There are four opponent powers. So this is the good news, guys. So you've gone through the death and impermanence and the realms and the suffering. Now, how can we purify it? Here's the tool. We're going to do a meditation on this. I'm going to keep my eyes on the timing here. The first one is called regret. So let me get to some of my notes here. Okay. So, again, all of these four called opponent powers, these are tools to purify karma, bad karma. It is the intensity of each one of these that matters. Not just saying, I'm so sorry I did that. That's fine. Wonderful. Good start. But you have to have the intense regret in doing something, really. You know, and then you have to, it's very important. Remember the difference between regret and guilt. Guilt, we are caught up in this attachment to be loved and approved by others. That's guilt. And what happens is, it's hopeless feeling. I'm depressed, I'm down. Somebody tell me I love you. That's where we go. Right? You're looking for approval. Regret is not like that. Regret is, supposedly you took a poison, okay? And you can do two things. Get sicker and sicker and sicker. Or say, I gotta go to a doctor. This is not healthy. Do something about it. And that's where regret is. It's a wonderful way of seeing things. You've done something wrong. You recognize it. You want to be happy. You don't want bad karma. So you want to turn this around. So now you're gonna regret and do something about it. Simple as that. Don't dwell on it. Move on. You think about it, you feel it, you regret it, and do something about it. Don't corner yourself and think, poor me. Don't do that. Okay? So that's regret. So regret is an attitude that acknowledges that you did something, okay, and now you want to turn to change it and create the right attitude. So you also recognize the consequences of not remedying it. Okay? We tend to ignore it sometimes, or we tend to go in a corner and mope about it, right? So there are consequences. Also, we try to blame or deny. Oh, that wasn't the reason. I did it because he did that and she did that and I did that. You make all these things up in our mind to justify it. Just plainly look at it. Don't blame, no denial, no that was a bad thing. Out it goes. I'm going to work on it. It's not going to happen right away if it's a bad habit, but you can work on it. You will recognize it. That's the number one. Let's recognize it first. And why? Say, I regret this because I don't want future suffering. Simple. Okay? So acknowledge, take responsibility, go see a doctor, take the medicine. Buddha's teachings. Okay? So anyways, I took this note from Venerable Romina. She says, think, I deeply regret having all this nonsense in my mind. Whatever I did in the past that caused me to have this habit, I regret it from the depth of my heart because I don't want future suffering. So she says, not only this life, past lives, even things you don't remember. If you've done it, this is a habit from a long time ago, I want it gone. That's how you work at it. Okay, so then the next thing is reliance. So you got to go see a doctor now, right? You recognize a problem, you got to go see a doctor, and that would be a Buddha's teachings or the path. Okay? So, but remember this. It's not Buddha out there in the sky helping you. I want you to think about this. It's the teachings and you changing your mind. That's helping you. This is the wonderful part of this path. Okay, first you visualize these things, but you make it your own. Okay? So, this is a very key part to it. And we rely upon Buddha and practice what he's saying, because you already know about mind, how mind functions. Now you understood a little bit about karma, how karma functions, and it makes sense to you. So now you go and have a rely on Buddha, Buddha's teachings. Okay? Okay, and we'll go to this in a minute. The third piece I have is a remedy. So remedy is doing prostrations, mantras, circumambulations, visualizations, the tools. So these are remedies. These are the tools. You want to put a screw, you're going to get the right screwdriver, right? So if you want compassion, you may want to practice Chain Resistance Mantra, or go come to a class and, you know, calm yourself down and think about compassion. Whatever the tool is that you're working on, these are tools. Also, when we do prostrations, remember I said, think about body, speech, and mind. You're respecting the teacher. I want to improve my qualities. This beam of light from Buddha, or what you're saying is you're putting this pure light in your mind as you're prostrating to make yourself humble. Right? It's a wonderful little practice. This is the 35 Confession Buddhas. If you learn a little bit about it, what that means, amazing practice. Amazing practice. Okay? It's a tool to get you, to your mind cleaned, purified. Okay? Then you can do visualization. And it's also very important. You know, what it's saying is you can not only do these mantras and this chanting or whatever you do, but you can do something out there, including this. So if you're talking about compassion, maybe go liberate some animals, go feed a poor person. You do activity with it sometimes, combine it. So it's not just sitting here when you're just doing your thing, shopping. Help somebody. Let somebody go in front. Try it. It's very hard for me, but I am telling you. You know, but you know what I'm saying. These are all things we have to talk to ourselves. And can work small little ways. Alright? But mantras are very powerful. Once you have this commitment in your mind that you want to change and you understand the mantra and you say it, you are putting a lot of seeds in your mind, positive seeds. This is, you're telling yourself, this is what I want to do. This is what I want to do. This is who I am. This is who I am. You continue to do that and all of a sudden you start to see your behavior slowly change because you can't be thinking that all day and then not do it. It will happen very spontaneously and you'll feel good inside too. Okay? And that's the remedy. And you can purify killing, but the last thing is resolve. A strong determination. That's the most important, not to do it. It requires the understanding the process of karma and the power of mind and the power of intention. Now you know karma. It ripens. You do something, it will ripen. Also, before dying, these habits will come and get you hooked onto it, and then what happens? So when you know and mind is continuous, so now you know these fundamentals. Remember those contemplation, mind being one of them. It's continuous, it's formless, it wants to know, your goal is to become a Buddha, then this is an important, strong determination not to do certain things. And be confident, and you know that you can do it. That's the beauty of our mind. It can be molded. That's what Lama Zopa Rinpoche says. We can mold our minds into any shape we like. So another thing is, this is not about saying, I'll never be angry for the rest of my life. We all know that's really not truthful. But can you say, I'll try for the next hour, no matter what happens, I'll kind of control that. Then you're successful. Or maybe before going to bed, you at least can get 7 hours of free time that you're not doing it. But you feel in the morning, I practiced it. Just give yourself a little thank you. And when you do that, what you're doing, you're really slowly and steadily giving yourself little bennies of doing good things, like little rewarding your mind, saying, yeah, that was a good thing I did. Oh, that was a good thing. Same thing with exercise. Don't we do that? You make a little milestone, you lose a couple of pounds or you do something, I'm going to go get that. That was wonderful. I was able to do it. That's the same kind of thing you can train your mind with. That's a mind training also. And this is about positive. Any questions on the four? Just quickly, nothing, just you understand the four opponent powers. So you understand the regret, not guilt. You rely, you know, you remedy, then you rely, and then you resolve, make a resolve not to do it again. Venerable Tendrinla, who is our Sangha but is in Florida right now, she used to add a fifth one, and rejoice. She used to always add this, and rejoice. When you do some of these things for yourself, be happy about it. Don't make yourself constrained. You know, don't beat yourself up. Do it in an easy way. Doesn't happen? Fine, try it again. Fine, it's okay. Okay, we've been doing it so many lifetimes. At least you're recognizing it. That's a huge step, right? That's what they're saying. So I want to really, before we go into meditation, for next 10 minutes, I'm going to use my notes, but I want to talk about the 12 links of dependent origination. Sorry, 12 links of dependent origination. What is it? Let's first talk about it. This is important piece. This is now bridging. We're taking you to the next part in the path where now you understand how we get looped into this cycle of birth and death. It also introduces you to a little bit of renunciation. What is renunciation? It also brings you, it introduces you a little bit of emptiness. Okay? So you can, beginning to get a taste of that a little bit in here. So I'm going to use my notes because these are 12 links. I want to make sure that I go through them each one by one and that you have a full understanding. So also this dependent, related links or branches or limbs are steps to the evolutionary cycle. When we take birth, what happens, a chain of events that take place until death, and then what brings us back again to this cycle again. This is what it's talking about. This is how it is linked. Okay? Causes us to be reborn into suffering again and again and again. So this teaching, this particular teaching I took from Lama Yeshe archive, this was given at Tushita Mahayana Meditation Center in New Delhi. And it is translated, edited by Nicholas Rybush, one of your readings, and Glenn H. Mullen for Mahayana Publications. Okay? So what they're saying is, Dharma practice is totally integrating the teachings with your mind. So when you practice something, you want to integrate with your mind. Don't make it just in a book. You want to bring it in. And then you create this spiritual stability. Kind of, you get the thing, rhythm going. Right? Okay? And within your stream then, what happens is you start to generate this renunciation, and I'll explain you what that is in a second. So you realize that you're caught in this cycle, rebirth, death, rebirth, and cycle, and you become acutely aware of it. So you put your mind on it, saying this is what's been going on all these lifetimes. Okay? And you recognize it is unsatisfactory. This is not pure happiness. You gotta go through this birth, school, whatever the condition you're born, if you're a human, that is, animal life, whatever the being, think of the fears and all these delusions, all these things we have to do. Age, sickness, you could have a problem with one of your limbs, whatever, sicknesses and all that. You go through this all the time, and there is a way out of it. Buddha's already told us that. You can be Buddha. So why not be in that state? But what is it that brings us back again and again and again? This is what they're talking about. Okay? So, this pure, spontaneous, constant aspiration to be free from samsara is renunciation. It is not about leaving your home and running away. This is not talking about that I got to give up everything. That's not. It is how you see things. If it is helping you grow, if it gives you a stable place to do things, perfectly fine. It is all about your mind. You're renunciating from those things that come in your way. Do not get to the Buddhahood. Okay? So there's two ways to develop renounced mind. So understand the nature of suffering and the causes of suffering. Okay? Remember, ignorance is a major player. Okay? Two main ways to present these 12 links. One is a scriptural way and one is the experiential way. Scripture is very technical. Each thing has a lot of technical pieces. The best way to really give it or talk about it is how we experience in our lives all the time. It's the easiest way to do it. So the very first one is ignorance. If I don't finish this today, we'll continue, but I want to do a meditation that may take us 15 minutes or so. Okay? So I'm going to, if I cut short, it's not because of that. It's pretty much at the end. Then I have a meditation and dedication. So what I want to do is at least give it a little justice. We'll go through it. And if not, as you know, I always cover what we covered last class, and we'll catch up on this. Okay? So the first one is, the first link of the 12 links is ignorance. We should know ignorance. Okay, this ideation of I, right? We already talked about it. Not knowing the way things exist. So here it says, it's the root of all samsaric suffering, means not seeing the way things are, and implies an obscuration of mind. So the general principles of ignorance is, we have this certain concept of I, self. Buddhism calls it ego. Okay, it is with us all the time. Okay, more intense and visible at some times. Remember I told you when somebody gives you, calls your name and all of a sudden like, it's me. Right? Or something comes at you or somebody insults you, that comes up again. So it wants to hold on to that, right? It's more intense and visible at times. Each of us are subject to our own mindset of what is an I. Okay? We can very easily see that. Each individually we can see that I. So whenever ego concept arises very strongly, it appears to exist very solid, like it truly exists, like it is there. Okay? Very vivid and totally uncontrollable. Okay? It's there. It automatically comes up. There it is again, right? So what they're saying is, this is how the false self grasps at it. This is how the ego makes you grasp at it. I exist this way. This is me. Okay? And what they're saying is, when you really do meditation, of course, when we go into emptiness class, you get into the four, the four ways they look for I, and the four factors, okay? And you'll see that when you look at your body, limbs, there is no I in it, in short. Then you say, it's in the mind, that this whole package. That's what my mind goes to, right? But when you really look at mind, how moment to moment is changing, it's simply mind stream. There is no I in it. It continues to thought to thought to thought to thought to thought. So then, what is this I? So that's the thing to think about. And it's very subtle. It talks about it without going into it. So when you realize you're not a concrete I and you're not nothing. It's a very subtle, it's a deeper subject, but when we talk about subtle consciousness or mere mind, okay, this is where it takes you. So it's a very subtle thing. But this is what keeps us from getting into the Buddha nature. This ignorance that I am truly there. Everything is solid. We don't realize everything is impermanent. It is dependent arising. Everything comes from something else that came from something else. Let's take a look at the tree. Came from a seed. Seed came from a fruit. You go on now all the way. You won't find an end. Same way with us. Think about it. Our mind came from so many previous moments. These cells are changing every moment. Your red cells are dying and born all the time. Every cell. Your skin is going, your hair is changing, this floor is changing, it's impermanent. But we see everything in this solid form. And it's okay conventionally. It's perfectly fine. Jennifer is here. Gary's there. It's okay, this is conversation. But you gotta have this deep understanding of how things are. And all of a sudden, you find that we're all same. We help each other. We've been for each other in many different ways. And you have a different view of the world, and it's more into emptiness, and there's a whole class dedicated on that. But I want you to just understand, get a little glimpse of it, where this is going. Okay? So we neither exist as simply as ignorant as mind supposes, nor do we not exist. The middle way is that there is subtle something, and it's just that we need to know that there is no concrete me. That's all you need to understand. Okay, so then what happens? All the delusions start from that ignorance, right? Once you have that I concept, we talked about it, then what starts? Attachment starts. Then something else starts. So the very next thing that happens is the karmic formation starts in your head. And what that means is you have now stains in the mind from distorted actions of body, speech, and mind. So ignorance has created a lot of these stories now, right? Attachment and this and that. So you have these formations in your mind. They arise out of ignorance, attachment and aversion. Okay? These imprints remain in your mind. Then it manifests either as a favorable or unfavorable experience. So that's the second link. It's called karmic formation or volitional formation. Third link is consciousness, continuity of the mind stream. Okay? So serves as a basis of imprints of karma, carries the imprints along, helps them ripen. Okay? It serves like a cause for a growth of a crop. Like if you put the seed in and the crop comes out, requires right conditions, then it comes again. That's what the mind stream does. Then there are two things that happen, two types of attachment. One is called craving and one is called grasping. So number four is craving. It's attachment that evolves from ignorance also. It helps conditions the karmic seeds, and I will tell you in a minute. And then the second one is grasping, also from attachment, which functions to fulfill the karmic seed. And what that means is, craving helps to ripen the karmic seeds. Craving. When you want something, you're just saying you're craving something. It brings out karmic seeds. It starts to tickle them, per se, and they start to ripen. And grasping brings them to completion. You got it. Right? That's what happens in our mind. These are little steps of how it starts from ignorance. So we have fifth is grasping. Three more minutes there. The big one is becoming. Then what happens? Becoming. This karma, throwing karma arises at the end of the life. That seed now, everything that you've been doing, it arises at the end of the life and immediately directs us towards a future existence. Okay? So then, we'll talk about this probably in the next class as what happens when that takes place, and we'll go through becoming, then how rebirth takes place, then a name and form gets, then the six organs develop and begin, then we have contact with outside world, then we start developing feelings, right? Once you have a contact, I like it, I don't like it, right? Then you start to get this feeling, and then what happens with the feeling? All the other pieces that go with it. You know, the feeling you get, right? Good, bad, ugly, all that. And then the aging and the death cycle starts, and this continues. And then you have grasping at the end, craving at the end. You go into the karmic life cycle. Again, those delusions go with you. Still a little ignorant, starts to do it again. This is how we keep on cycle. So once you understand this, then what happens? You can work on this. Okay. Yeah, can we we'll talk right now?
Once you're done with your point.
Yeah, so I actually want to go to meditation, so then we can talk.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll talk. Okay, so we, in the end, it says we are all trapped in this process of repeatedly circling on the wheel of birth, aging, death, intermediate state, and rebirth. On and on and on. Okay, and once you understand the causes of samsara and you meditate on these 12 links and understand how things exist, what happens is you start to liberate yourself. So you understand ignorance, you understand samsara, you understand the causes for samsara and how these 12 links are interrelated. We only went to the 8th one. We have a couple of more to go through, but I gave you an overview. These links keeps us in this cycle. It even talks about how the mind comes and sits on the sperm and the ovum. That's also part of becoming. And then how it goes into developing the sense, becoming the body, the organs develop, then what happens. And then all of a sudden, you're back into the same cycle. Okay? So just these are links very important to know. All right, so we are going to actually, and please, just one more thing I want to say is everybody understands the four noble truths, right? At least we know that basic one, that truth of suffering, that means what? Dissatisfaction, complications, sicknesses, causes for suffering, the three poisons. Remember those guys, right? Ignorance, attachment, right, and aversion. Okay? There are other afflictions also like pride and wrong view and all that. Cessation, suffering that can be, and it can end this. You have a choice. You are controlling your mind. Like Venerable Robina would say, you are the boss. We can change this. Buddha's teachings are there. And there is a path, the Dharma, the Lambrim. It's four, okay? Okay, so now we're going to do a purification mantra. This may take 15 or may even go a little longer. If you have to leave, please feel free to leave at 8:30. I understand people have places to go, but it may take a little longer. I also want to let you know that we're going to use Vajrasattva mantra. And for those people who don't know what that is, okay, we're going to visualize Buddha, and it's given so much support by all the lamas and lineage lamas. Vajrasattva for purification is, even when you do get into heavy duty tantra practice and all that, they will tell you to first purify with the Vajrasattva mantra, and we'll talk about that. But while we are meditating, before I say the mantra, I found through the FPMT and through my own practice a summary of what that means. So if you know the mantra, say it. If you don't know, just listen to it. Even the listening to it, the seed goes in your mind. Very powerful. But I will at least give you the meaning, main meaning of the mantra, so at least you know that's what you're saying. Okay? It helps me a lot, because a lot of times you say these things and it's like, what was that? Right? So it's important that you understand the meaning. So what I like you to do is, like our 7-point meditation, find a very comfortable sitting position, or if you're in a chair, be comfortable. I'm not going to go through your backs, legs, arms, head, and jaw and mouth and that. You should know that now. Okay. Relax and scan your body. Okay. Now, with a little calmer state of mind, let's begin the actual meditation on the four opponent powers. Just engage your mind in this way of thinking. The first one is regret. So just think about and identify and say to yourself the various actions and habits you have in this life with your body, speech. That harm others. Just recall them. Speak them to yourself. Okay? I have lied. I've done this. I've done that. Contemplate the things that you've done with your body and speech that harm others. Regardless of the reasons, it doesn't matter. Just think of them and list them. And think, I regret doing these. I really do. Because, and this is the point, I don't want future suffering. These have left karmic seeds in my mind. A habit to do these things again and again. And this is harming me. I don't want more suffering. I'm tired of suffering. I don't want the harm that others do to me. Because that's the result of my own past karma actions. I don't want to continue doing these things because that causes me so much pain and hurt. And I don't want more sufferings, not to mention lower realms. It's so clear. That's the feeling to get for yourself. This kindness. This strong recognition. That I don't want more suffering. So I regret it from the depth of my heart. I regret these things that I've done and said, all the things I don't remember in this life and I've done to harm others. Of course I regret them. I don't want more suffering. And all the delusions, they are things that definitely just harm me. I may not say those things, but my own depression, my own fears, my own jealousy, my own paranoia, my separateness from others, my arrogance, my criticizing others, all that stuff that floats around in my head, my attachment, my neediness, my anger, my hurt. I regret all of these painful states of mind. So we go to reliance. We start with the first part of reliance, taking a refuge. So now, what can I do? Whom can I turn to help remove these seeds from my mind before they ripen in the future as my suffering? So here we are using Buddha as our doctor. We rely upon Buddha, rely upon his methods, relieved to have these methods that we can put into practice for our own benefit. So imagine above our heads the Buddha in this particular form. He's like a monk. The classical image of Buddha in the monk's robe with that top knot holding a bowl. That's the classical image. This represents the first level of practice, which is subduing the body, speech, and mind. Now taking it a step further, taking it from Tantra, we are going to visualize the Buddha in what they call the Bodhisattva aspect, or the Vajrasattva aspect for purification practice. In this case, now he's adorned with wearing royalty and silken clothes, beautiful earrings, necklace, all the beautiful decorated stuff. That's the Bodhisattva style. So we imagine the Buddha in this way. He's sitting the same way above our head, just as we are sitting. He's got a white light body. Everything is radiant white, sitting on a white lotus. He's sitting in a full lotus position. Just imagine it. Everything is made of light. In his left hand, he is holding a bell, which represents the full development of wisdom wing. In his right hand, he is holding what they call a vajra, or dorje in Tibetan, which represents the compassion wing. The union of these two represent complete Buddhahood, wisdom and compassion. It's a very beautiful face, sweet, radiant face. His earlobes, necks and arm and feet are decorated like you see in the paintings. Everything is made of light, radiant white light, infinite compassion. He's the embodiment of compassion and wisdom. So if you have a spiritual teacher already, and you've committed yourself to someone who you call your Lama, your spiritual teacher, then you imagine it's actually their mind, their consciousness manifesting as this Buddha for your benefit. It makes it very personal, and truly seeing the Guru as the Buddha. But if you don't have a very vivid visualization, do not worry about it. Just imagine it the best that you can. We've got to start somewhere. Now feel the presence of his enlightened energy above your crown, full of compassion, full of love, full of wisdom. He only wants you to be happy, like your most precious loving friend. So now we go to second part of this reliance. It's where we think of compassion for others. The first step of regret is where we think of compassion for ourselves, but now we also think of others. So think of those we have harmed and been unkind to, our parents, our friends, husband, wife, sisters, brothers, dear friends, strangers, people we didn't like, so many people we've said mean words to, or we've rejected, or been unkind to. Think like this. I know what it's like to suffer, and I've harmed them. I must change. I must purify this karma so that I can benefit others. You can also think of those who have harmed you. This is much harder. Why would you have compassion for them? Because we think of karma, we know their own harming of others is what will cause them future suffering. For this reason, we will have compassion for them. Due to their ignorance, they've done these harmful things. And because they don't have the view of karma, either they don't think or they have no regret. They hold on to anger, the resentment that will only cause them suffering. So we deeply have compassion for them. We must purify ourselves for their sake too. So now we turn to a remedy. We take the medicine. We do a little visualization and reciting of a mantra. This is the medicine we are taking, the remedy. So purifying the negative karma of the body. Just imagine from the heart of Guru Vajrasattva or Lama Vajrasattva above our heads. He's sending a very powerful hose of energy that comes from his heart and hooks you around. He's sitting above your head. So the energy hooks around and comes under him and comes into your crown. This is a powerful nectar like a hose of energy. So strong that it arcs around and comes into your crown and fills you completely so strongly, forcing out all the imprints of the harm you've ever done with your body. This is the first stage of purification. All the harm you've done with your bodies, the stealing, the killing, any misconduct, karmic seeds, bad karmic seeds, this forceful, blissful energy comes from Lama Vajrasattva, forces it out all through your lower orifices. Just like dirty, filthy liquid disappearing into space until there's not an atom left, completely gone. Imagine, I really want this. So I'll recite this mantra once. If you know it, you join in. If you don't, then just focus on a visualization and the sound of the mantra. Even hearing it leaves an imprint in your mind. And I'll read a little summary of what this mantra in general means. This is not word by word, but it gives you the idea. The mantra is, you, Vajrasattva, have generated the holy mind according to your samaya or pledge. Your holy mind is enriched with the simultaneously born holy actions of liberating transmigratory beings from this samsara. Whatever happiness and suffering, good and bad, happens to me by my pleasing the holy mind, please never give me up and guide me. Please stabilize the realizations of the path in the realms, including the happiness of upper realms. Actualize all actions and the common and sublime realizations, and make the glory of the five wisdoms abide in my heart. So here's the mantra. Om Vajrasattva Samaya Manupalaya Vajrasattva Tenopatita Drido Me Bhava Sutokayo Me Bhava Supokayo Me Bhava Anurakto Me Bhava Sarva Siddhim Me Prayata Sarva Karma Sucha Me Chittam Shriyam Kurum Hum Ha 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 Ho Bhagavan Sarva Tathagata Vajra Mame Muncha Vajra Bhava Maha Samaya Sattva Ahum Phe. So this time, Guru Vajrasattva very compassionately sends the nectar from his heart chakra, forcefully entering through your crown, this time filling us powerfully, forcing out from the top of our body all the imprints of the harm we've done with our speech, all the criticisms and judgments, and which destroy our mind. So all of this, you imagine being forced out through the top part of your body, pushed up by all this nectar, disappearing like filthy liquid into space, gone. Not one atom left. Full of radiant nectar, so blissful. All the negative karma of speech are gone. All the negative karma of body are gone. Imagine this. I want this. Now imagine the Guru Vajrasattva's heart, his heart. He sends very powerful beams of light that enter into your crown, instantly filling us, instantly dispelling all the negative states of mind, which are the source of our own suffering and the source of harm we do to others. That means the root ignorance, the primordial misconception of love about self, the ego grasping, the attachment, anger, pride, depression, jealousy, fears, all of this. We imagine totally full of this radiant light, dispelling the darkness instantly. As Lama Yeshe says, like turning on the light in a dark room, the darkness is instantly dispelled. The last piece, resolve. The most important, the one that helps us change. We mold our minds into whatever shape we like. So we've taken vows already. A vow not to kill. Vow not to steal. Great. Reiterate this. If we've taken other vows like bodhisattva vows or tantric vows, then we make a powerful commitment that I will never break them. Strongly determined, happily determined not to break them. And so now if you haven't taken these vows, it's okay. Just say, I will never kill again. I will never lie again. I will never steal again. With the intention, the right intention, it's amazing we can even do this. If not, we can give ourselves a timeline. It's a very practical thing. Maybe for 1 hour, maybe for 2 hours, maybe for 24 hours or for a day. So make a determination, maybe for 24 hours. I will not badmouth. I will not lie for 5 hours. I will not be angry for a day, a week, or a month. Just take one of the old habits and make a determination. Give yourself a timeline, a strong commitment, very powerful. While the external circumstances are strong, our mind can be stronger. So, just contemplate this for a few seconds. Just be really strong. It's between you and you, and only you know. It's your mind, and you're in charge. Think, I will do my best. I'll be brave, I'll be courageous, I'll be sincere, I'll make effort to see my mind, to see my actions, to know I can change step by step. How marvelous, I'm not stuck with who I am. So now, imagine Lama Vajrasattva so delighted, like a loving friend, like a loving parent, so delighted with us. He dissolves now, and you imagine this, into white light. The lotus, his body, everything into white light, radiant white light. Onto your crown chakra, just in front of your spine. Enters into us, and imagine it comes to our heart chakra, where our very subtle consciousness is residing. There it merges with your own mind. Just imagine this, the radiant white light. And what is this? The Buddha's mind, the Lama's mind, and guess what? My mind, all same thing. Wonderful. Let's dedicate, thinking how fantastic throughout the session, listening to all these things, trying to process it, analyze it, Think about it. Aspire. Have courage. And it's my wish to benefit others. How marvelous. The marvelous purification practice we have done. So incredible. So powerful. We dedicate all of this to the sowing of all the seeds for the sake of sentient beings. And when we do become a Buddha, who else will we benefit? Other sentient beings. So this is for them. Long term. That's why we are sowing the seeds now. And may this compassion grow and grow in hearts of all. Thank you. Next class will cover six perfections, the root cause of samsara. We'll touch emptiness, start with the renunciation, and we'll do two meditations. Okay? And we'll finish up the 12 links. I have four more to go.
I have a question.
Sure.
The 12 links, I have read before and I'm familiar with our different order. And even in Lama Geshe's website, it's a different order.
Well, I'll show you the site I went to. There was a teaching done on this. And they can be in there are two ways to teach it. They call it the scriptural way. And then they call the experiential way. We chose the experiential ways because it follows the pattern. And it's easy to talk that way. But we can talk about it and I can show you. Matter of fact, a couple of these things lead you to this. And then a couple of these things can lead you to that. It can go different ways like that. But in general, what happens is a cyclical way of looking at things, how slowly things we experience. That's why I went in that way. I went that way. I looked at it from different ways. And also know that when you go outside and you see this big tanka with this person holding a big wheel in the hand, the outside wheel are the 12 links. The centerpiece is the three poisons. The wheel above that are the karma. You see the people ascending to the higher realms and people descending. Then you see the six realms. Okay? And then you see the 12 links. And that's the cycle of life and death. So when you go there, oh, imagine it's just allegorical. So they put a person with an arrow in the head and they put a little pig in the middle. And that. So there's a story to it and you can find a nice writings on those and I will be more than happy to share what they really mean. It was very interesting to see. And then on the top right hand side, usually there's a Buddha pointing at a moon. That means he's showing you the way and moon represents liberation. And Buddha is pointing to the path that there's a way out from this cycle. So it's kind of interesting to see how those tankas are done. So thank you for your time. I know we went a little over today.